All right, so I'm very excited for this episode of the podcast. I have a former Heisman Trophy finalist, 4 seasons in the NFL as a running back, including for my New York Giants and the LA Chargers, and now the owner of his own brand, clothing brand. Sorry, I screwed that up a little bit. But Andre, how are you doing?
I'm good, Andrew. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and it's crazy to, to talk to you now. I don't know if you remember, but I pulled it up on my phone. I met you about, what was it, maybe 8 years ago now? 7 or 8 years ago? Something like
Yeah, it was a
that.
long
A long
time
time ago.
ago.
So I have this picture here, if audio listeners won't see it, and it's glaring a little bit.
Yeah.
You were still in college there, I think, or just fresh out of college.
Well, it would have, I think I was in college if it, how many years ago? 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, let's see, what year is it now? It's 2022. I graduated in 2013, 14. I was in the league.
Okay.
So 6, 7, 8.
Oh
Yeah, I
wow.
was just getting out probably.
Wow. Okay. So that's really crazy to think about. I didn't realize it's been that long. So we've seen a lot of growth in each other, over the last almost decade, I guess. But I did want to ask you a little bit. I know it's a few weeks removed, but did you watch the Super Bowl at all?
Absolutely.
You did? And who were you rooting for? I know Odell, your former teammate, was on the Rams or is on the
I
Rams.
was rooting for the Rams, man.
Okay.
I was rooting for the Rams. There are a lot of guys like Odell, in that group. Aaron Donald, we came out together. That was 2014. It was the year I went into the league. Odell was actually my roommate for the rookie whatever thing we got to do in the beginning. And yeah, I wanted to see him win, man. I wanted to see him win. I always liked Matt Stafford as a quarterback, and I just thought that the way that they put that team together, that player personnel executive group that they have is the most valuable in the league because they really know how to find the talent and put it together, and they have the coaching staff that knows how to manage that talent and that star power. And I just thought they had too much for the Bengals, and it proved true. But on the other side, Joe Burrow, he is a force. He kept it close, and I'm glad that the league has another quarterback like that, and I'm glad that Cincinnati has a leader for their franchise. So, yeah, I watched it.
And you did spend time in LA, but long before SoFi Stadium was open. Are you jealous at all that the Chargers now play and the Rams, of course, play in that beautiful new stadium?
No,
No.
I
No.
I'm so far removed from the game, Andrew. I don't care about anything that is.
Really?
You and somebody could call me right now, right, and say, "Look, Dre, we need you to come back for $25 million. Got to play this one game, and I'm gonna go click because I'm good. I'm finding. I'm in a new era. We are in a new era, but me myself, I'm in a new paradigm. You know what I'm saying? I'm using my business mind now. I took my foundation, my athletic foundation, and I'm using it to carve out my stake in the fashion world. So I'm having fun a totally different way right now.
Well, that's a perfect segue into your company. Do you want to talk a little bit about it? How it came? I know you've branched off into numerous different things since the NFL, and even when you were still in the NFL. So could you talk to me a little bit about the brand?
Yeah, so the brand is called All Weather Selvage, and the signature of the brand is I use Japanese selvage denim to create an athletic fit. So it's got a little extra space in the thigh, the top block, taper below the knee, and it's just constructed in such a way as, it was fashioned after an athletic build. So you put the jeans on, it makes you look athletic. Just the way that the fabric is, the way that it contours to the body rather than stretches over the body, and then the manner in which it was constructed. If you manage to fit into a pair, you end up looking like your favorite athlete in a great pair of jeans.
Yeah, well, they're super comfortable. I remember trying them on when I came to your store back in October. And you did open a store up in the Lehigh Valley, back where you started, right? You went to high school in Allentown. What how does it feel to be back? I mean, did you I can't I must have asked you this, but did you choose to come back to Lehigh Valley or did it just happen by chance?
I think it was both. It was destiny. Sometimes things happen in your life where you have a choice and you could go this way, you could go that way, but something is kind of pushing you this way, So you really got to listen to your heart. And at the time, I was was it? It was 2020. I was in Houston. Playing football with the XFL, and we were busting everybody up, and then the pandemic happened and it shut the league down, and that was my first, foray back into professional football. And when that happened, it was kind of like it was a sign from God. It was an omen that this is really not your lane anymore. You're supposed to go do this other thing that you started back in 2016. You're supposed to follow through with that now. So I ended up coming back to Jersey. I was in the process of selling my townhouse that summer and moved back to PA.
And you did mention 2016 was the year, because I thought that this idea for you, the jeans, have been around for years, right? 'Cause I think I remember seeing pictures of, was it Mark Herjlich in the jeans or doing an ad for you years ago? So what made you, was it, what made you start wanting to make jeans? Is it because of your very unique build? Almost, I think you talked about AJ Dillon last time I saw you, and like the quads and everything. I don't imagine you fitting into jeans other than these.
Yeah, that's the whole point. There's nobody that is making a cut that fits somebody with a normal size waist, but then has an above average thigh, and then still put the taper below the knee. They have some things that the relaxed taper, this, that, and the third, but the athletic fit is something that I'm claiming exclusively. I started as far as Japanese selvedge denim goes. Back when I was playing ball, this was 2015, so I was just about to get into my second year of football, and I had a marketing agent, and he introduced me to somebody named Eamon Walsh, and Eamon was just starting his footwear company in New York, and Eamon was like, "Hey man, you're a running back in the NFL. I could extend my creative faculties to you, and I got this crazy factory out in Spain. They're building the Balenciagas over there, and you can make a really nice, signature shoe." So I'm like, running back in the NFL, get an opportunity to make a shoe. I jumped at it because, like you said, I was always a tinkerer. I was always had an entrepreneurial mindset and just trying to figure out how I could play less PlayStation and do something that was more beneficial to me and to everybody around me. So I started messing around with a lot of things. I had built a fragrance lab in my townhouse at the time, was making soap and candles and different things like that, just for fun. But then when this opportunity came up, I had the cash to go ahead and pay to play. So I figured out how to make a shoe. And so the Running Man was my first, it was my first project, my first creative project. So that's this right here. And
Are they
then
available now?
no doubt.
Okay.
Absolutely. So when I made the shoe, it was fantastic. It was really cool. Felt proud of the shoe and everything. Was getting good responses on it. But then after you create, then that's when I realized the dichotomy between the salesman and the artist. They're on two opposite ends, and you have to balance it. Not everybody's gonna like what you create, but if you sell everything that you create, does it really matter? But if you are just making something just to sell it, does it really have any value in the beginning?
Yeah.
You know? So it was, that's the journey that I've been on the last 5 years. And plus life itself, married, divorced, kids, all types of stuff going on, pro football, injury, getting cut from the Giants, flying out to the West Coast, to LA, their last year in San Diego, actually, and then their first year in LA. There was all types of stuff going on, But when I finally settled myself and I, you know, lived a little bit of life and figured out exactly what it is that I wanted, I decided to open up a store. But from the shoe to the denim, what happened there was, I impressed somebody with that shoe. He's a developer. I met him in the city and he asked me why I made the shoe. And I was like, because it was cool. You know, I couldn't come up with a better answer. And like I was talking about the dichotomy. So then, you know, realized you can make a great product, but the market has to want it. Oversaturated with shoes. What else can I do? Because this developer, he just started giving me so much information. He qualified himself as somebody that could take me to the next level. Even though I had made a great shoe, I'm saying it's a high quality, genuine leather shoe. Like I said, they made them in the same place that are making Balenciaga. So it's a heavy, no cash. It's a nice shoe. But the denim, then I was like, all right, so I don't wear jeans. I can't wear, I like jeans, but I can't wear them because there's no fit for me. There's definitely not a sexy fit for me. So how about we make a sexy fit? And, you know, an athletic fit. And so he's like, all right, so that's a niche, however you pronounce it, that's what it is. It's a space that you can occupy that nobody's really addressing, and there's a market there. And when you do the market research, realize that it's over 500 million people that fit that athletic build, somewhere between 28 and 40, and then your thighs is this or that. You know, there's a lot of people. So if 500 million people bought a pair of jeans, I'd be a very rich man, you know? So then I said, all right, so I will roll the dice. And I took my signing bonus and I made my first order of fabric. You know, I bought a lot. For a starting order, not a lot, but there's a lot of products sitting in the back of that, that storeroom back there, you know? So I got enough to get started. And so, That's where I'm at.
And so is your store currently, is it just the physical store? Did you launch the website yet?
Oh yeah, I have a website. So okay. The website is, that's a whole nother idea. So you see, it's a denim boutique here. I have jeans, but I have three lines. I have the AW line. I have DK Shin, that's AW's foil. And then I have the Running Man shoe, you know, so even though I'm a denim company, I don't want it to just be that, you know, I got a lot of stuff and there's going to be more stuff. Maybe I collaborate with somebody that wants to do, you know, athletic wear, whatever it happens to be, or artists that, you know, I want to do a little collection with. I wanted to have a website that is, it's really a platform for a digital mall. You know, we are in 2022. We, you know, got the rise of Amazon. You have these drop shipping operations. There's all kinds of ways to move product online, and it's getting bigger every year. And now you enter the metaverse, you know, the digital representation of the real world. So, I'm looking into it heavy, you know, NFTs and cryptocurrency. Blockchain technology, all of that stuff. So Don and Swagger is really like, it's a digital mall. That's where it is right now. It's in its infancy, but you can get all the product there that you see in the store.
Yeah, and I saw that you had this amazing commercial. Was it with QuickBooks? Was that for the NFC Championship game?
Yeah, QuickBooks and NFL on Fox sponsored a commercial that featured my store.
Yeah, so how did that idea even come up? Like, did they propose it to you, or did you have to reach out to them?
Yeah, that spot on a game like that, the spot like that on TV costs like five So I certainly didn't have the cash or the whatever it took to go reach out. I didn't have the cash or the clout to reach out to NFL on Fox and try to claim that spot. But Fox is a great organization, and they have a group of ladies that are their like their brand partnership managers. So they will look out for somebody or some brand that they think would be a good representative for their client, QuickBooks, to go ahead and make a commercial. So they proposed a few different. They were looking for a athlete or a football player that started a business, and so there were a handful of candidates, and then AW Selvage came up, and who's I talking to? It's Sarah Strauss reached out to me, and the person that I dealt with mostly was a woman named McLean West, and Mac. She told me, she was like, when we pitched you to QuickBooks, it was a unanimous decision. They all wanted you. So we're reaching out to see if you want to do a commercial. This probably would be good for your brand, and it's going to air during the pregame show of the NFC Championship game. So I was like, absolutely, let's do it. That was December 4th that they emailed me. We did a little interview with the production team that they use, and I talked with the producer. Paul Canny. What do I call him? The producer, the director. He was the top dog. He was telling everybody what to do. And they made a masterpiece, man. And they really, I didn't just appear in a commercial. I was the one that was, I did the voiceover, and they let me pick the cast from local people that I knew. So it was a great experience figuring out how those things go down. And they made me grade A production that it showed on national television. So it was grade A distribution as well. So I do appreciate them for that, now that things living on the internet.
Yeah, and it did look amazing, like you said. What was that experience like for you being? Because I imagine, they had a crew come over, and you're having to do makeup and all this stuff for, like I know, it's not like you have this humongous store that you have to walk through, but it did, it just, I don't know, something about the commercial just felt so real, but it also looks so professional, if that makes sense.
I mean, it was professional. Like I said, that's a $5 million production. So I'm just blessed that they picked me, and I was able to take part of it. And really, it was just having the physical store that even though we are in the digital age, the physical store, as far as clothing goes, is still so strong that it brought that opportunity here. I didn't, I, you know, I was putting stuff out for years as far as, marketing this, that, and the third. But as soon as I said that I'm actually opening up a store, and especially in this time now during pandemic, this, that, and the third, like it's chaos out here. So when I said it actually ended up, even though in retrospect or in hindsight, it was a great idea. When I actually said it, everybody looked at me like, why would you want to do that now? Like, it's so risky now. Like, look, all the retail is falling. I'm like, exactly. That's why there's a space for me to do it now. And like I said, it was just something because I said I was going to open up a store. All the good stuff started happening. And that doesn't mean it's easy. There was no, magic explosion of sales that happened from the commercial. It definitely sparked some things, definitely for my social, but like I said, it was a great experience nonetheless. They came, it was December 4th, the email came in December 14th, we shot it. So it was really like a 10-day expanse of time that we put the whole thing together. They came and did their scout. The weekend after we talked, the day before we shot the thing, they set up in the store next door. It's empty right now. So they had their whole production crew right next door. That's where we did the makeup. Everybody ate snacks over there. We did the voiceover in there. And then, we really shut down this whole street. So it was a spectacle for the mall as well. The promenade out here, they enjoyed it, and great experience.
Yeah, and can I ask you, like, I know this is probably a question you get a lot, but what is the what's your end goal, for your brand? Do you want it to be, do you always want to own it, or do you want this to be sold in other stores, or is it always going to be your baby, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Well, I went the retail route first. I was selling in another store. I got into Liberty Fair Trade Show in 2019, so I showed my product in New York and in Vegas, and that was around the time where those sort of things, trade shows and those things were on the decline right before the pandemic actually happened. And then the pandemic actually wiped a lot of trade shows out. I don't think Liberty Fair is even operational anymore. But I got into one store from the trade show. It was called Dutille. It's a denim boutique in Canada. And they have stores in Calgary and Toronto and Vancouver. And then the pandemic happened as soon as they took my first shipments. So we didn't sell much. They ended up sending my stuff back here. And I said, well, moving one or two pieces a month or none, that was cool. That was exciting. But I feel like I can do better. So now it's my turn to open up a store. And when I had already said, I'm retired from football. I'm done. I'm not looking at professional sports anymore. I'm going 100% with my brand. And then I felt confident and ready to, open up a store. So that's pretty much how I got. If I'm looking at the future of the brand, I would say now it would be open up more all-weather salvage stores, not necessarily sell to a distributor, because why do that now when I'm already building fire by myself? I think as far as for the rollout of the brand, what I'm looking forward to right now is the second season. I have a lot of fabrics that are on reserve out of Japan, and I would like to bring them here and start doing cut and sew in LA for season two. And I'm gonna catch up on the ladies' side. I developed an athletic fit for the ladies, and the guys that I used to do it, they went super hard, and like they flew to England and they fitted the English women's volleyball team. So, they are fantastic to work with, my development team. They go the extra mile because we really, speak and understand each other and know, it's art. It's not just about the selling. It's about the artistry of it. I feel it, and the development team feels it too. So, definitely have a special relationship with them where I'm able to do things that normal people aren't able to do. So yeah, excited about season two, bringing in the ladies' fits, because I thought it would be a great idea to come into the mall. I'm like, man, they got all these ladies' stores here. There's not many men's stores. I'm gonna do it for the guys, and the guys are just dumb shoppers, and they don't know what they want. They're looking at this and they're looking at Lucky, and they think it's the same thing. And the ladies, if I had some styles for them, it would really help me rotate a little bit better. And so that is my main goal. It's just the way everything is as far as shipping and supply chain issues, man. I can't bring anything by boat. The ports on the West Coast are just, I don't know when they'll be fixed. It's a real issue, but there are ways around it. It's just the ways around it are four or five times more expensive, so patience.
And I think something you mentioned is, I mean, you run the store and you're there a lot of the time, like you're there right now. Is there are there any, like, I don't know how to put this, but like, kind of salesman tricks you've learned along the way? Because a lot of the time when people come in, you have to sell them on the jeans, right? So, is there anything? Because I've seen you work your magic on one or two customers before, but I'm just curious, is there anything you picked up on that, or unless you just naturally had this salesman quality to you?
Well, I think the key to being a good salesman, for one, if you actually own the product, you have a leg up on anybody I can hire to try to sell the product, because I know it the best, and I don't just know it because I know where it came from. I'm wearing it every day, so I can tell you exactly what the difference between this and that is. I can say, all right, I can size this person up and say, you know what? In this particular pair, the raw denim, because I know that the raw denim is cut a little bit bigger because of the shrinkage rating, they're probably a 34, even though they're telling me that they're 32. You're a 34 guy. I'll be right back. Trust me. Because if you can size somebody up right away and say, oh, yo, you're a 34 or you're a 36, and they're like, you're right. Then they're like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing, So, qualifying yourself to the buyer, that helps. Giving them a little bit of history, being able to talk about the product knowledgeably, that helps. I got this guerrilla marketing technique where, I'm trying to bring somebody in off of the street rather than walking out there because I'm tired of that. I don't want to do that anymore. I'd rather just sit my butt right here and have them come in. But what is the draw? They're probably going to make their way around the mall at some point. There's enough around here to, the movie theater is that way, food is that way. So no matter which way you come in from, you're probably going to pass my store. So I have a sign out there and it says, hole in one, free jeans. Free. That word free is like people go ding dong, ding dong. It's something I could get for free over here. Let me just go ahead and try it, And in the spirit of competition, I have given away 12 pairs of jeans since I opened. And, I don't have any problem with that because somebody has to win. And when somebody wins, they're going to put on those jeans and they're going to wear it. And somebody's going to see and be like, damn, bro, where did you get those jeans from? They'd be like, well, I won them over there at All Weather Selvage at the Promenade. It was pretty cool. Only problem is, I did realize this a while ago, is that people appreciate the things that they pay for much more than the things that they get for free. So I use things like that, but sparingly, because people appreciate the things that they pay for. That's why it's a little, even with my business now, it's confusing people to a certain degree because I'm offering them the wholesale price because I'm sitting next to people like Lucky and American Eagle instead of Diesel and Tom Ford. Those are my real competition. That's in terms of fabric and construction, that's what you're getting. You're getting couture, but because I'm sitting out here, because I'm a new brand, because I'm a black man, I have to do things slightly different, So I offer this product that is it's Louis, it's Diesel. It's Tom Ford, it's Gucci, it's all of those things, same level, but I'm offering it at a premium price. And so people are like, oh, well, this must be the same thing as that. And it's really not. But if you price it like that way, you do confuse people to a certain degree. So it's a very delicate balance trying to be a salesman, trying to be a new brand, trying to break into high fashion as a newcomer. Where, you got to play tricks.
Yeah. Well, and I think the, you being able, I've now that you say that, I remember you being able to guess like the waist length or whatever, the waist, what is it called? The size of
Waistline.
people. Yeah. I remember you even did that for me. I don't know how you do that. I don't, I guess you're just good at guessing, or is it, do you have some sort of trick? Can you just, is there something about a person that tells you?
It's just experience because I've done it enough times now. In the beginning, I wasn't that good, but now I'm pretty good at it. Like I said, each fabric is just a little bit different, especially if it's raw or if it's washed. The fabric reacts differently. If it's Tom or if it's Brad or if it's George, I know George is a low tension fabric, so it's a relaxed fabric, so it doesn't fit as tightly. Some people can fit into the 34s. I'm fitting into a 34s, even though in the Brads, even though in the Toms, I'm wearing a 36 because that fabric is high tension. So it's just for my thighs, I need a little more space. You know, maybe it'll break in later, but I don't even, I'm just going to get into 36 because I know that fabric. So then now I'm looking at other people's bodies. I see, is their body type similar to mine? Is there, are they a little bit on the fatter side or more a little bit on the denser side, the muscly side? Because that has an impact. You know, are they, wide hipped, are they skinny hipped? You know, are they tall? Because there's my jeans, you know, 40 34 is the biggest size I have. Most people, if you're over 250 pounds, 40 34 is not enough for you, unless you're tall. If you're 6'4, 6'5, there's a guy that's walking around, he's got two pairs of my jeans, and he's 278. You know, big dude. But because he's athletically built and I can see that, I knew the 40 34s would probably fit him, you know. Then a guy came in just the day before, and then that customer I was just talking about, same height, same weight, but his composition was totally different. So the 40 34s, he couldn't even button, you know, and I knew they weren't going to fit him, but he wanted to try them, you know. So just experience, I guess.
And you know, I don't want to harp on the NFL too much because I know that you're now in a different stage of your life. But I did have a friend of mine that knew you from the NFL even before I know him personally. I don't think he wants me to say his name, but he did have a few like kind of quick questions. I was wondering if I could ask you those really quick before we head out. The first one was, you know, you played for the Giants and the Chargers, and even before you were on the Giants, I was a Giants fan and I loved you know, Eli Manning, but he wanted to compare the two quarterbacks he played with in the NFL. You know, you had Eli and Phillip Rivers, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. You know, you don't have to say which is better or worse, but just, you know, even as just as people and as quarterbacks, you know.
I think that they both have their upsides and they both have their downsides, right? One time we were trying to center the ball for a field goal. So Eli just had to move the ball a couple yards to the left. And this guy almost twisted his ankle doing it. You know what I'm saying? Like it looked bad. So I'm glad he didn't fumble the ball the way he went to the ground. So Philip, definitely a hardier guy, definitely a little bit more athletic. I ain't gonna say he's that much more athletic because
Really?
he's not,
Okay.
but you know, he had this galvanizing character to his personality, to where he could kind of rev it up in the huddle. He could, I'm saying, he could make you feel a kind of way. Eli, on the other half, he is more of the professional, very professional, very New York, very East Coast corporate. But he didn't necessarily, he wasn't that hype man to where he was gonna get hyped up and cause you to feel some like, damn, he just got me hyped. I'm about to go. He wasn't really like that, you know? So two totally very different guys. Not saying that that's a bad thing on Eli's side, but I think that his situation when he was winning, when he was having his heyday, they had a group of guys around him. Like I met Ahmad Bradshaw, I met Brandon Jacobs. I felt their energy. I knew what that must have been like to be in a huddle with some guys like that. Hakeem Nicks and some of those guys that he, you know, he went to war with. There was a lot of, he has some dogs around him, and the dogs plus the professional leadership, they won championships. Philip, on the other hand, he never won any championships, even though he had that leadership. I'm not saying Eli's not a leader. He was more galvanizing. He was more, I'm saying, dagnabbit, we need to just go ahead like that, you
Yeah.
know,
Well, and I
didn't
wanted to ask
curse.
you. I was going to ask you that. Have you ever heard him curse ever?
The country curses, yeah, dagnabbit was one of them. That's that was as far as he went. And Eli didn't curse. His face just got real funny. He
I was
always
going to
had
ask you that
he
too,
had one of
because
the funny faces on.
right, because Phillip's known for like the dadgummit kind of stuff, but Eli also has that same kind of like, oh shucks, kind of like, you know, I can't imagine him cursing either, but was he'd be more likely than Phillip? with actual cursing, I guess I should say.
Eli was, he was just like a dead body. He didn't cuss at all.
Okay. That's interesting.
He just, if something happened, he would just be staring and just, yeah. I don't know.
So who would you rather catch a pass from? Who was easier? Because Philip had that sidearm. Eli kind of had the longer throw, you know, the longer throw motion, I should say.
Eli had golden touch.
Okay.
I'm saying, I didn't catch a lot of passes from Philip because when I was with the Chargers, I wasn't really the starter like that. They had Melvin Gordon. So Melvin got his reps with Philip. I got my reps with the other guy. Philip, I think the ball spiraled in the opposite direction out of his hand or something like that. Like, it was totally different. It wasn't necessarily hard to catch. He had great touch, too. Yeah. But there was something that you had to get used to was I think the ball spiraled in the opposite direction. I don't remember if he was left-handed or what the heck it was. But, yeah, he had that sidearm, too. Great touch, but Eli was much. But, look, I got my biggest knock. Coming out of college was that I didn't catch. I rushed for 2,000 yards, but didn't have any reception yards. This guy can't catch. And I had 21 receptions my rookie season from Eli Manning. I'm saying. So I give him the most props as far as touch because he made me look good. So
And do you have a favorite, you know, NFL memory that sticks out, you know, anything? And it could be from either team, you know, offseason, regular season.
Favorite NFL memory? I don't know if I have a favorite memory, man. I had some great times. I remember my first 100-yard game we were playing against the Titans. And, you know, it was just so much going on at the time, but I was starting that game, and then it was our first time playing in Tennessee. They had the grass field. It had rained a little bit, or it was raining, so I had to put in my long studs. I was feeling kind of crazy because I don't really use long studs in general. I had those claws. Yeah. I always like to wear the claws. And so first time I took my claws off, ended up going for 100 yards. And, you know, it you feel good, but then you're like, damn, does that mean I'm not supposed to be wearing my claws? Like all types of stuff where, you know.
And that's the game where I think you ran like a 50-yard touchdown, right? Like it was off a toss and you bobbled the ball and then kept it and then ran all the way. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like that. I had another game against the Rams back when they were still St. Louis and had this ran inside zone and it just opened up and I hit the hole and it was a, you know, breakaway run. I think the safety that was playing there at the time, his name was Rodney McLeod or something. And I trucked it. It was real bad. Yeah. And then the crazy part of the play, though, I think it went for like 60 yards or something, but Aaron Donald had ran the play down from the back end. I'm saying, this guy plays in the defensive line. So that's what I'm telling you, like playing against guys like that, yo, you've been doing this a long time. You deserve to win. And we came out the same year, you know what I'm saying? So definitely I'm glad this was the best playoff series in NFL history this year. It was really great to watch. Definitely enjoyed that. My first start was against the Eagles, and we went into Philadelphia, and I realized how nasty those fans really are. They bring their kids to the game to cuss people out. So that was fun.
The only other memory I wanted to talk about was you were actually on the field for Odell's big catch, right? The one that everybody knows, you know, you think of the Odell. And I think, honestly, you go a little bit under the radar with that play because if you didn't block Eli's blindside, he's probably not getting that ball out. I don't know if you remember that play at all. But, you know, you were on the field for it.
It was I think it was a play action pass. Mm-hmm. And there was, I think the right guard was John Jerry. It was a big burly black dude named John Jerry. And I did my fake real hard. I'm saying John had he I think he got knocked back a little bit, but he was holding up. And I was running my fake so hard, I tripped up his foot. He almost lost the, yo, the play almost went sour off of that play action. But you making it sound good like I had Eli's back. It was a couple that play you talking about. It we were playing against the Cowboys. He caught the ball like this. It happened a few times. I think that was the first time it happened, but there was a few times where Eli threw that same ball. His down the field, sideline, drop it on a dime ball. He's one of the best in the league at doing that. And so that was one time it happened. But I think that first time it happened, I almost tore that play up, to be 100%. Well. Don Jerry was in the backfield a little bit. I think I might have stepped on his leg or I knocked the defensive tackle back into him, but not too far left. Something bad happened where I was like, oh, snap, Eli, please let go of that ball. And he did, and it ended up being a crazy play.
Well, it worked out in the end. Do you remember, like, since you were on the field for it, like, because on TV, you know, people went crazy, the announcers went crazy, but being in the stadium, you were in MetLife, you know, do you remember that moment when people realized he actually caught that ball?
Oh yeah, they didn't. Yeah. They replayed that thing like 10 times, and not just that night. It kept getting replayed. So definitely remember all of those things, man. I'm sure there's plenty I done forgot all of the football I played. Definitely remember the good times.
Yeah, and my last question for you was, my friend is, he wants to get into the, you know, into the professional sports world on the business side of things. And I think I had even talked to you about this back when my focus was still in sport management and business and whatnot. But I know that you were a player, but you've also seen the other side of it. Do you have any advice for those who, you know, kind of want to work in the NFL scope or landscape? I don't really exactly know how to put that, I guess I don't know if that question even really makes sense, but
I mean, you got to figure out from which end you're trying to do it, because, you know, coaching player personnel, that is the business side. But then as far as, marketing, player management, that's the other side of the business. So,
yeah, well, what about player personnel, if you know anything about that? Because I think that is what he wants to get into.
So, I mean, he is looking to make a lifelong commitment to this thing, because the amount of time, they always need guys to be the underlings that is going to go put in 100,000 hours in tape and film and travel here and bring this back, and all of those, that stuff is what you got to do in the beginning if that's the route that you want to go. And I think it's going to benefit you if you came from the sports world, a college, and played football, whatever it happens to be. But I don't necessarily think that it's politics to everything, where people end up where you wouldn't expect them to. He's going to have to start. He's going to have to get into a program and just start climbing.
Yeah. No, that's completely fair. And it's great to hear your perspective on that. If people want to, check out your genes on social medias and your personal social medias and the website, do you want to plug that here?
Oh, I appreciate you. Yeah. So my personal Instagram is DreWill44. I push a lot of stuff from my business Instagram, which is AW Selvage. That's SELVEDGE, AW Selvage, All Weather Selvage. I push a lot of stuff between those two accounts. And then the website is donandswagger.com, donandswagger.com, Don and Swagger. So that's our digital mall platform. It carries all the brands that I have here. And, in the future, there'll be other things. AW will end up branching off on its own, especially as we move into Made in USA in season 2.
Perfect. Well, I'll link all those, in the description below, of course. And, Andre, it was a great pleasure speaking to you. I appreciate you taking so much of your time to talk.